ushering in a Thursday morning for all of the United States. And I know we do have listeners who are expats or members of our military serving in different places around the world. So you're on a completely different schedule than we are. If you're across the pond or in the Mideast, elsewhere, if you're expats, every now and then we hear from the Far East as well. So wherever you are, Australia, we've had some listeners down under. Glad to have you with us, whatever day part it happens to be. But for those of us who are here in the United States, all of us inching toward September 26th, Thursday, not only are we a couple days from the end of the Major League Baseball season, we're on the cusp of week 4 in the NFL, week 5 in college football. And I know that there are some questions about how the upcoming hurricane, the quickly approaching Hurricane Helene, will impact the college football slate. And I think a lot of schools are keeping their eyes open. Conferences are watching the weather very closely. Alabama A&M has already postponed its game against Florida A&M, so that one was scheduled for Tallahassee. It's not just about the actual game day, and of course, some of these games will fall in the path of the hurricane. It's a large storm. But others are about the travel and how teams get there. And so teams are having to deal with that aspect as well. In fact, that's part of what is weighing heavily on Brian Snitker's mind. So the baseball situation we'll talk about here momentarily, but the Atlanta Braves have had their games against the Mets postponed, right? So they were dealing with rain on Wednesday and had to move their games. And I think in large part, this is maybe not a ton of foresight by Major League Baseball, though you can't always blame a league. Sometimes weather just is weather. But the Mets-Braves series, the final two games, they were postponed Wednesday because there were rains ahead of the hurricane. And a doubleheader is now set for Monday, which is after the regular season is supposed to be done. Though they do build in this Monday so that any tie-breaking games can take place, or if they have to make up games, they will. But the Mets have to go to Milwaukee starting Friday for a weekend series, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So that's their final three games, or should have been their final three games of the regular season against the Brewers. The Braves are supposed to be hosting the Royals. But Brian Snitker now, not even sure if the Royals are going to get there, and also has no idea whether or not Chris Sale will even be starting on Friday.
That's one of the things that we're talking about now. How we're going to approach the weekend. I hope the Royals can get here. Because, I guess the big, the hurricane's going to sit on us tomorrow. I saw the extended forecast and everything. I would hope they would, and, we wouldn't get things screwed up for their series.
Yeah, so both these teams were off on Monday, kind of a built-in day off for a lot of teams before they hit these final 6 days of the regular season, 6 games in a row, kind of backloading the week, so it's more dramatic that way. And the Mets were able to get in and play the Braves on Tuesday, and so that was the opening game of the series, but then postponed Wednesday and Thursday and turned it into a doubleheader. 40 minutes is all they've planned in between the two games that are set for Monday. But now they've got to deal with their own series. So the Mets did leave, and they will play in Milwaukee. And now the Braves are hoping the Royals can get there. And here's the other aspect of it, according to Snitker. The games may actually not be played depending upon the next series.
I don't know how they determine the seeding thing, what the rules on in the bylaws or contract or anything like that is. It's my understanding that if it didn't matter, then we wouldn't play it.
All right, so what he's saying is that if they didn't need the games to determine the wild cards, the seeds, then they wouldn't bother. Although I'm not sure how that's possible. just looking at the standings right now, I suppose there is maybe, let's say one of the teams got swept over the weekend and the other one won all three. There'd be maybe some separation there. But right now, if you're talking NL wild card, there are only three teams left for what are the two remaining spots. Okay, so we don't know if Padres or Dodgers will have the number one wild card. And I guess, theoretically, there is a chance that one of these teams could catch them. So again, you're talking about Padres losing the rest of the way and one of these other teams winning out to overtake them. But we know Padres are in. So now you've got three teams that are still alive for the other two wildcard spots. Mets and Diamondbacks are virtually tied. They're separated by 1/1000th of a point. It's about the Mets having one less win and one less loss. So, yeah, because of the game that was postponed on Wednesday, now you're talking about the Diamondbacks being ahead of them in terms of games played. So, Diamondbacks and Mets are essentially tied. The Braves are a game back. It's hard to imagine a scenario where the games don't matter on Monday, right? Like Diamondbacks, they're fighting, scratching, clawing. They've got an opportunity here. So let's say the Diamondbacks win 2 of 3. The Mets, the Braves win 2 of 3. Then you're in the same exact situation. I don't know how they're not going to play them, but it's interesting to think about the impact. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Schedule. MLB postseason schedule. We know now that the wild card series, I don't love that. The wild card series are threes, right? So they're three game sets. And right now, we're scheduled to have four of them begin on Tuesday. And then they would continue. I think that whole first week is about getting the wild card series done. So I think, if I remember correctly from last year, Pete, you may remember too, that they do it Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. They straddle the way that they have them set up. They straddle them. But the game threes are supposed to be on Sunday. Is it Saturday and Sunday? Let's see if I can get the whole... Remember last year we didn't need any? Do you remember that?
Yes.
So we went into the weekend and there were no game threes in this new format, which of course is not what baseball wants. Let me look here. Okay, so this is their new... This is the schedule that's out. Four series that start on... Tuesday, October 1st. Oh my gosh, Tuesday, October 1st. They would also play Wednesday and Thursday. The division series are set to start on Saturday. Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. So Friday's a built-in day, probably because it's for travel, right?
Or rainouts.
Right. True, but mostly travel, because the teams that end up winning have to get where they're going, right? They're not going to be hosting. They're wild card winners, so they're going to another site. So Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and then division series start on Saturday. But I do remember last year we had no game threes, and so it was weird. It was like right at the start of the playoffs, all of a sudden there were 2 days off, and it was odd. I don't know. I don't like the format, but I know they're going to keep adding teams and games. So that's just where we are. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Of course, October is the busiest month of the year in pro sports. You've already got NHL preseason games taking place. Not that we're covering those. That's against my religion. But you do have preseason games that are taking place in hockey. Soon we'll have basketball exhibition. But all four major pro team sports are operating in October. It's the one month of the year where all four have games that count. For baseball, of course, it's the postseason. But then you've got NFL, NHL, basketball by the end, NBA, basketball by the end of the month. We also have the WNBA playoffs. We have MLS still going on, for those of you who are really into it. And on top of that, college football. And this weekend is... I don't want to say it's the first big game, because that's not true, but it is a doozy. It's one of the top big doozies in the first month of the schedule. It's Georgia, it's Alabama, and that's my date night on Saturday night. So after running the half marathon on Saturday, I'm not up for doing anything else the rest of the day. I'll be eating, I'll be showering, I will be maybe taking a nap, although sometimes I'm too sore after a half marathon, believe it or not. I can't find a position, whether laying down prone or sitting in my chair, where after a couple of seconds, things don't hurt. Okay, maybe a minute or two, things start to hurt. And so I have to constantly move around, which is why it's difficult to take a nap right after running a half marathon. Anyway, I was watching, what was I watching? I was watching the WNBA game. So I was watching the Fever and the Sun, which went down to the wire. And I saw an ad, a promo on ESPN for Georgia, Alabama. And right away, Saturday night, 7:30 Eastern time, which is 6:30 Bama time. But it's a Saturday night game. And I said to my husband, he was doing something else, hey, how about a date night to watch Georgia, Alabama? And when I said that, his entire face lit up. Do I know the way to the man's heart or what?
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. Yes. So anyway, Hurricane Helene is certainly wreaking havoc for a lot of people. A lot of people who've been ordered to evacuate in Florida. I know that to be sure. But it is potentially going to impact some of the sports over the weekend as well, because it is expected to strengthen into a Category 3 hurricane before approaching the Gulf Coast. And because it's such a large storm, there could be storm surge. And I'm not making this word up. This is not my word. This is the National Weather Service, their word, unsurvivable storm surge, as in 20 feet of storm surge with Hurricane Helene. And so there are a lot of people, thousands of people who've already been ordered to evacuate or have been recommended to evacuate. Wind and rain. We're talking about the east side that's supposed to be the worst. So that means along the coast where they were recently battered by another storm. I don't remember if it was a hurricane or a tropical storm. But yeah, you've already got some events that have been rescheduled and postponed. And I imagine there will be others as well. Because it's sports, right? Even if it's big business, there still needs to be safety taken into account, not just for the athletes and the travel parties, but also for the fans that would be making their way to these particular venues. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. So while we're waiting to see what happens with the National League wild card, we know that the American League wild cards are also hotly contested. And man, in Detroit, they are celebrating like there's no tomorrow as they inch closer to a postseason berth.
2-2 again. Fly ball left field. Deep into the night! Gone! An absolute torque bomb to left field, number 10. 5-1 Tigers in the sixth. Richie Palacios at the plate. First pitch fastball high in the air to center field. This should do it. Parker Meadows makes the catch. Tigers win! Jackson Job with a scoreless inning in his major league debut closes it out, and the Tigers keep inching closer to a spot in the postseason.
We're trying our best to make everybody in this city proud of us, and we're doing well. You know, I mean, obviously it means a lot that our fans care. It was electric atmosphere tonight, and this is exactly what we want at Comerica.
I'm so happy for AJ Hinch. Boy, did he suffer through a couple of really tough seasons there with the Tigers, and even to start this year. They were 11 games back. They were 11 games back in mid-August, and now they're 10 games over 500. As you hear on Tigers radio, since August 10th, their record is 29-11. It's one of the best in Major League Baseball, right up there with the Padres. And so the Tigers end up winning again. Meanwhile, the Royals have gotten off the schneid finally as they take on the Nationals.
Robbie Grossman turns around, bats left-handed, lines one into center field for a hit. Salvi coming home to score. Here comes Gurriel around third. The throw home is cut off. sliding in safely, Gurriel. It's a two-run single off the bat of Robbie Grossman. And the Royals have a 3-0 lead here in the sixth inning.
Winning's fun. It's so hard to win games at this level. And anytime we get a win, W in the win column, it's good for us.
Robbie Grossman with the big hit, the two-run single that propels the Royals to a victory over the Nationals. Remember, they had dropped 7 in a row. They finally got off the schneid on Tuesday, and now they've won back-to-back games because time is of the essence. So the Tigers and the Royals are still sitting on identical records, and if you were talking about the American League wild cards, right now they have the 2 and the 3 wild card seeds. That sounds weird. But they have the Royals and Tigers right now are sitting in the 2 and 3 wild card spots. But the Twins are 2 back. The Mariners are 2.5 back. So they're officially still alive. But as we get closer to the end of the regular season, more teams will be eliminated. I don't know if you saw this, but Red Sox and Rays both officially eliminated earlier this week. In fact, I think that the Red Sox may have just been eliminated on Wednesday officially. And so, yeah, right now in the American League, you've got 3 Central teams that are still alive for these 2 wild card spots, and the Mariners are clinging to a pulse, clinging to all shreds of hope. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. That's the call there on the Royals Radio Network. And for Robbie Grossman, I also heard him say that it's a privilege to put on this uniform. And I love that. I love that approach with the Royals and the Tigers, who both kind of had to resurrect their seasons. Maybe a little bit of, what's that called when you put the paddles on someone's heart? Shoot, it's not jumpstart. It's
I'm blanking now, too.
Oh, it's it's kind of like a jump start, like jumper cables for your car, but it's not that. It's called the, oh my gosh, someone can find me online at A-Law Radio. I can't remember what that's called. It's a shock. It's no.
Like a paddle. Like,
right. I could see it like from Grey's Anatomy and ER in my head, but I'm sure there's medical professionals who are listening. Shock paddle? No. What's that called? Pete's looking it up online. Oh, it's the worst when you could see something in your head, but you cannot come up with the term for it. I apologize for offending all of the medical professionals out there. However, that is not my department. I just know that that's the image that comes to mind.
Defibrillator
paddles. That's right. Defibrillator paddles. Thank you, Producer Pete. That's what I feel like when I think of the Tigers and the Royals. Now, the Royals more recently because of their 7-game losing skid and 27 innings without a run. The Tigers going back to mid-August, you want to talk about being on life support and barely having a pulse or a heartbeat, as it were, if we're talking about the defibrillator. Defibrillator. There we go. Try saying that 5 times really fast and see what happens to you.
One time really fast.
No one will give you a radio show if you try saying it 5 times really fast. I just happen to already be here. So the American League wild card also hotly contested. Mets and Braves right there in the mix, along with the Diamondbacks for the National League wild cards. We still do not have a winner for the AL East or a winner for the NL West. And we'll get to that coming up at the back half of this hour, potentially, because I'm late. I got to get you a break. And straight ahead, we've got some QB news, the latest on some of the injuries as well. And so you want to stick around for that because that's good stuff. It's NFL season, peeps, and NFL drives the bus. Good morning to you if you're waking up on your Thursday. Ouch. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Murray back to throw, and it is. Is it tossed? Oh, my goodness, it's tossed. DeAndre Hopkins caught it.
Back from under center, steps back, throws the fade.
Cooper Kupp got it. Touchdown, LA.
Burrow back to throw, looking, firing deep for Chase in the end zone.
Oh,
he's
yeah.
Got it.
Mahomes fires for the end zone, caught, touchdown, Kansas City. And off to Heckler again, no, Herbert keeps it, end zone, touchdown, Chargers. Herbert with his second of the day.
Here's the snap, Josh going to keep it himself and run it again inside the 5, into the end zone, touchdown, Buffalo. Josh Allen, 9-yard touchdown run. The Bills respond and then some.
It's time for QB News on After Hours.
We're just scratching the surface, getting ready for week 4 in the NFL. And QB News is brought to you by Ethos Life, the easy way to get life insurance in 10 minutes, up to $2 million in coverage with no medical exam and just a few health questions. Get your free quote at checkethos.com, not available in all states. Well, let's start with a couple of the injured quarterbacks and what we know about them. Jordan Love, practice again this week. Will he start in week number 4? Well, that remains to be seen, but he says he's getting closer.
We're building it up for sure. Every day is a little bit better, and it's kind of just based on how I'm feeling and kind of just basing off of like practice today, how I'm feeling, and going from there.
But what about last week? How close were you to playing in week 3?
I was close. You know what I mean? I was pretty close. I was pushing it all week, trying to get myself ready. But, you know, at the end of the week, we just determined I wasn't there yet where I wanted to be.
So far, Malik Willis has been the right answer for the Green Bay Packers. Back-to-back wins for them. He had a rushing touchdown and a throwing touchdown against the Titans in Nashville last weekend. If we see Jordan Love, terrific. I mean, that could be best-case scenario for a team that got a real scare at the end of its Brazil game in week number 1. He does look like he's moving better. And so as they advance toward a huge game on Sunday at Lambeau Field hosting the Vikings, there's still a chance we could see QB1. Well, what about the other team? The Vikings will be there at 3-0, and we'll hear from Aaron Jones next hour because this is his return to Lambeau after 7 years with Green Bay. But Sam Darnold also had an MRI because he was feeling a bunch of knee pain.
Be able to move forward with the plan and just continue to, you know, go through exactly what, you know, the trainers are expecting me to do every single day. And just, I think the biggest thing for me right now is just to take it one day at a time, you know, as I kind of do with everything. So, no, knee feels pretty solid. But like I said, you know, just going to continue to take it one day at a time.
Yeah, so right now he's trying to get the treatment that he needs from the athletic training staff. There is no structural damage to his knee after the MRI, which is great news. A bruise is all that they saw with the tests. He's not expected to miss much preparation time for week 4. And so it will be Vikings with Sam Darnold, Aaron Jones, Justin Jefferson, Jalen Naylor, that defense that's been so terrific the first 3 weeks against these Green Bay Packers. And right now you've got 5 wins between those two in the NFC North, plus the 2 the Lions have. It's turning into one of the tougher divisions in football, even early on. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Also thinking about Justin Herbert, another injured quarterback. Remember, he limped off the field in the second half of the Chargers' loss last week, and now they take on the Chiefs in week number 4. The Taylor Heinicke appearance was maybe not a huge surprise because Herbert had been listed as kind of a question mark and day-to-day going into that week 3 start. And then he had to get more treatment. He tried to play. He told us on Sunday that he really wanted to be out there despite the pain. But it got to the point where it wasn't the right thing for the team. And so, of course, he's dealing with the pain this week.
Progressing. You know, we got the results on the MRI and the X-ray. Both were good. So moving forward with it.
All right, so considering that last week he was day-to-day and last week he was a question mark, how much farther along in terms of being healthy?
I think it's progressing. You know, it was just really painful during the game. It was the built-up from the hits and the toll on it. But I think at this point I've done a good job of rehabbing it, of getting treatment on it, and I think we're taking steps forward.
He was limping pretty badly on Sunday, and it's a high ankle sprain that he was dealing with in camp. Remember, it kept him out for part of preseason. He is going to keep using the word progressing. That's probably a word that's safe to use, but he does say that it's in a better position now than last week. He doesn't know about week 4 if he'll be able to play against the Chiefs on Sunday, but he does say he's doing everything he can to get out there, of course, and he's critical, especially when they've got these all-new receivers around him. And for Jim Harbaugh, who's working hard with Justin Herbert, there's this idea that he's going to be able to unlock the potential, help Justin get his game to the next level. But even so, they've changed a lot of pieces on the offense, and Justin Herbert's critical to kind of kind of be the glue that keeps them all together, especially in this first AFC West battle. In the AFC East, we know it's already turning into a fight at the top between the Bills and the Jets. This weekend, Alex Rodriguez. No. The other A-Rod, Aaron. it's middle of the week. This is just what happens with my brain. And we're going to see a lot of A-Rod, the baseball player, during the postseason. But Aaron Rodgers and the Jets will take on the Broncos. Remember, they had a near-perfect home opener, more than a year in the making. I saw some of the post-game footage from inside the Jets' locker room. They were thrilled. Robert Saleh was singing his praises. Well, he just wants to make sure they stay focused on the task at hand.
It's easier when you kind of get kicked in the teeth to kind of come together. It's us against the world. It's us against the big bad media who's saying how bad we are. You know, we can kind of come together. But can you still come together and have the same approach when everybody's kind of starting to sing your praises a little bit? I think that's the mark of a great team.
All right, so can you, in times of success where it's good, can you still stick together, or do your mind start to wander? Do you start to think about, hey, my social media, or man, I look good in that touchdown celebration, blah, blah, blah. Adversity does tend to bring guys together when there's positive leadership. When they've got the leadership, he's healthy this year. And so we'll see if the Jets can stay focused on the task at hand. No, this week there's been some jokes made about the headlines that are from the outside, right? The noise, as Aaron Rodgers calls it. They still don't have Hassan Reddick, and so there's been some jokes about whether or not Hassan's responsible for some of the negative headlines about the Jets. But honestly, once you're inside that locker room and you get into the season, you're fairly insulated. You try to stay insulated and just focus on what you need to do as a team, and that's really where leadership comes in. In the AFC North, Joe Burrow trying to be a more vocal leader because they've had a lot of changes on their roster too, the Bengals.
I'm usually a lead by example kind of guy, but I think I could pick my spots, say some more things, so find those spots this week. We got a lot of young guys that we're counting on. I haven't really been here before, so have them hear my voice a little bit might be beneficial for them, I don't know.
Well, and how critical is it now as the Bengals have fallen into an 0-3 hole? Remember, their defense got pasted by the Commanders. Jaden Daniels, what an incredible performance for him on Monday night. The 91% completion rate, a couple of passing touchdowns, including what was the go-ahead game winner in the late stages. And I tell you what, that drive was a backbreaker for the Bengals because the Commanders had the ball for 7.5 minutes of the fourth quarter. They kept it away from Joe Burrow and the Bengals offense, Ja'Marr Chase, 7.5 minutes in the fourth quarter. That's how you render a great quarterback completely ineffective, is you keep him on the sidelines. And so here's a rookie who won't give up possession of the football. They convert a 4th-and-4, and then he throws that perfect pass in the corner to Terry McLaurin, where only Scary Terry could get it. So yeah, that was tough. It was demoralizing for that team as much as it was a major stepping stone and a boost of confidence for the Commanders. You're talking about thrill of victory, agony of defeat. So here are the Bengals at 0-3. Only 6 NFL teams who've ever started 0-3 have made the playoffs. None of them so far in the 17-game schedule. And the Bengals have got some work to do. But it's been tough. They put themselves in a hole, and Joe Burrow will be critical to their getting out. The Browns in that same division have started 1-2, and there's a lot of flack being thrown at Deshaun Watson. He's getting booed mercilessly. Fans are more and more impatient. He was talking on Wednesday about potentially the type of plays that would call for him to run. He's not having it.
I'm not going in there to ask them for more design runs. So I'm not trying. If I don't have to run, I'm not going to run. So I'm not trying to take any hits. I'm not a running quarterback in a sense. I can make things happen, but I'm not trying to run. I'm not a running back. That's not my specialties. You know, they signed me to throw the ball, make decisions, and be a quarterback, not a runner.
I suspect, I don't know this for sure, but putting myself in their shoes, I suspect that there are many Browns fans who would prefer to hear, I'll do anything it takes. Now, I know he was injured a lot last year and the year before, although he had the 11-game suspension the year before, but it's taken a long time for him to get healthy, so maybe you don't want your quarterback doing any type of running or getting hit if it's needless and he doesn't need to. I certainly can understand that. Just the way that it comes across, I think you want a quarterback who will sacrifice life and limb if that's what it requires, though that is fairly dramatic. The Browns are on the road at the Raiders. Ooh, talk about two teams who desperately need wins. We're going to talk about Thursday night football next hour as we set you free on your Thursday. It's an NFC East battle and all kinds of attention on both the Cowboys and the Giants in that game that will kick off the week for Slate. So a little bit of QB news. They're still waiting to hear what might happen with the Miami Dolphins. And obviously there are a lot of other major storylines heading into week number four. One of those, by the way, is Kareem Hunt back with the Kansas City Chiefs after he was released in the middle of the 2018 season. You may remember that whole situation. He spent, I guess he got picked up by the Browns a couple weeks later, maybe. They had to wait through a suspension, or was that the next year? My dates all blend together, but the Browns picked him up and then had to wait through a suspension because he had led the NFL in rushing as a rookie in 2017. Well, now he's back with the Chiefs. He's talking to the media on Wednesday. Andy Reid answering questions about how they might use Kareem. Remember, they lost Isaiah Pacheco. They used Carson Steele to career carries and rushes in their last game. But they're looking for some help offensively because still right now it's the defense that is showing the way for these Super Bowl champion Chiefs. So a lot that we can still get to. I was talking about Cleveland. Myles Garrett, really cool moment between Myles Garrett and Malik Nabers in their game on Sunday. So I wanted to mention that too. In fact, we might be able to find the video. I think it might be out there. It was part of the NFL All Access and when they have guys mic'd up. 855-212-4227 at A-Law Radio. Also on our Facebook page. We're glad to have you with us. Good morning to you. Here's our latest sports update. And here's Marco Belletti.
Infinity Sports Network. Sports Flash.
All right, Amel, the Chargers, a big test as they'll take on the Chiefs in a big divisional battle, but they'll do so shorthanded. Derwin James, of course, suspended for the game, something that Jim Harbaugh is struggling with.
Look at all of his 20-some tackles on the season, and you know he is going out of his way. Literally going out of his way, sometimes giving up yards so that he can, you know, not injure another player or hit him with the head. So, yeah, I'm disappointed.
Meanwhile, Josh Allen turned some heads with his everybody eats comments about their offense this year, taking what some believe to be a veiled shot at a former teammate in Stephon Diggs, but Allen quick to say everyone's just overreacting.
Whether it's former players, and again, I love 14. I still do. But everyone wants to keep making this thing a thing, and you know, we're so focused on what's going on inside of our building, and that's the only thing that we're caring about right now.
Checking baseball with the Dodgers, which to the Padres, 4-3. Shohei Ohtani knocked in a pair. Magic number to win the division now down to 2. Tigers remain hot, dumped the Rays 7-1. Royals blanked the Nationals 3-0, so those two remain tied for the final 2 wild cards. Twins ripped the Marlins 8-3 to hold 2 games back. Mariners still 2.5 back. They took out the Astros 8-1. Diamondbacks rocked the Giants 8-2. Arizona and the Mets now tied for the final 2 wild cards with the Braves 1 game back. White Sox walked it off on the Angels 4-3-10. They remained at 120 losses. Phillies overpowered the Cubs 9-6. Guardians topped the Reds 5-2. Pirates doubled the Brewers 2-1. Rangers 5, A's 1. Orioles outscored the Yankees 9-7. Blue Jays beat the Red Sox 6-1. And the Cardinals handled the Rockies 5-2. Mets and Braves rained out for Wednesday and Thursday. Just one game separating these two, along with the Diamondbacks in the wild card race. They'll play a doubleheader Monday if necessary for the playoffs. College football, UNLV is 3-0 for the first time since 1984, but quarterback Matthew Sluka has announced he's leaving the team over an NIL dispute, claiming he was promised $100,000 and never paid. In WNBA playoffs, Sun dismissed the Fever 87-81, win the series in 2, despite 25 from Caitlin Clark, while the Lynx roll the Mercury 101-88, win that series in 2 as well. I'm Marco Belletti.
This is the Infinity Sports Network. Follow us on Instagram. Our handle is Infinity Sports Network. That's Infinity Sports Network to follow us on Instagram.
I left you hanging.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
I'm here. Thank you, Voice God.
After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
How many times did you play it? You just kept saying it over and over again?
Just played music.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah, that's Sports Minute sometimes. The editing, the computers, you know, they're from 1972, so they can get a little bogged down.
73.
But here I am. And yes, as the Voice God said, it's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Good morning to you on a Thursday. Had mentioned this briefly earlier in the show, but want to make sure we pick it apart a little bit because I know it made major headlines going back to, I guess it was Wednesday afternoon, I think, when I woke up. It was starting to be a really big deal. The quarterback, this is the starting quarterback of UNLV football. Duh. That was redundant, but you know. The starting quarterback for UNLV that is currently sitting on an undefeated record. I mean, so they're unbeaten. It's early, but they're unbeaten. He has decided he will leave the team slash quit. So quit. And redshirt the season over what he claims is money that he is promised that was never paid to him. Now, this is under NIL rules, theoretically. It's NIL rules, as I use my air quotation. But what I've told you all along, this is thinly veiled pay-for-play. And fairly soon, the NCAA will make paying athletes to play completely legal. But for now, you're not supposed to be paying athletes to play. You're supposed to be paying them when you use their name, image, and likeness. Or when there's a booster who has a car dealership and will pay exorbitant amounts of money through that dealership to an athlete who is, I don't know, doing an appearance or an athlete whose name is used in advertising that dealership. So that's why it's so easy to pay athletes, is because a booster can promise $7 million to an athlete who makes an appearance or whose name is used to promote this particular company or product. I mean, in some cases, you're talking legit money because it comes from national corporations like Nike, just to throw one out there. Nike or Gatorade. We know that Caitlin Clark, and these are conservative estimates, was making $7 million in her senior season at Iowa. And again, that may be a conservative estimate. She's making a lot more than that now. Yes, there are some athletes who are signed through their agents, quote unquote, to do national campaigns for different corporations, for different entities. But for the most part, what a lot of athletes are earning is supposed to be coming from local businesses, local companies, who essentially are offering a bunch of money, promising it to the athletes ahead of time, and then, hey, yeah, you can do this appearance, or I can use your likeness, I can use your name a couple times to promote my dealership or my company. So you can see how easy it is, especially when there are no regulations, to funnel money to athletes and pay them to play, even though that's still technically against the rules. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. So this quarterback's name is Matthew Sluka, and his agent has said publicly that the school did not come through on a verbal offer of $100,000 from an assistant coach. All right, so the agent is saying that he was promised money verbally, it's not in writing, but he was promised $100,000 from an assistant coach to play for UNLV. The quarterback's father, Bob Sluka, also told ESPN that the head coach, whose name is Barry Odom, told him on the phone that $100,000 offer, not valid, because it didn't come from the head coach. Instead, it came from an assistant coach. UNLV has put out a statement saying that Sluka's agent made demands, financial demands of the school and the NIL collective, if you will. That's the body that's supposed to be handling the money. They're saying the agent made financial demands upon the school in order to continue playing. UNLV Athletics interpreted these demands as a violation of the pay-for-play rules as well as Nevada state law. UNLV does not engage in such activity, nor does it respond to implied threats. UNLV has honored all previously agreed upon scholarships for Matthew Sluka. So according to the collective, oh my gosh, it sounds like some kind of a clandestine power group, a horde of power brokers. UNLV's collective did pay one $3,000 fee for an engagement he attended over the summer. Okay, so that's for Blueprint Sports, and that's the type of NIL that is reasonable, right? Not paying a quarterback $7 million to go play for a high-profile school. That, to me, is not reasonable. What company has $7 million to use someone's name, image, or likeness? You would do it in no other walk of life except for sports. But Blueprint Sports is a company that manages this NIL money for UNLV, and they're saying the quarterback did receive $3,000, but that they had no idea that there was any type of a verbal promise to pay him $100,000. But in the bigger picture, whether or not he was verbally promised this money and now the assistant coach is going back on it or the school's not keeping its promise, the bigger picture is this is the first athlete who has backed out of a scholarship or a commitment to a school because he felt like he didn't get the money that he was promised. Now, it may have happened on the DL, meaning there may be athletes who've transferred because they didn't get the money they felt like they were earned or they were owed. They earned or they were owed. I mean, we know the transfer portal is there for, in large part, that reason, because athletes are disenchanted with the money they feel like they're not making, or they think they could be making money, more money elsewhere. So that's happening with the transfer portal and with athletes moving to other schools where they feel like they're promised more money. But for an athlete to quit in the middle of a season and say, I'm going to redshirt this year because I'm not making the money that I was owed, that I was promised, I mean, that's a slippery slope. First time, bet it won't be the last time. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.